morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, this, you know, a lot of times we have our presentations on things that are really upbeat and festive. This morning's not going to be quite that way, but I think we all need to kind of know about this. And John Ackley spoke at my Rotary Club a couple months ago and really impacted me. I could do I know there's something in the voice on her. I could sit and read her bio, but if you ever hear me do an introduction, you'd be the last time you ever want to hear one. So I'm going to let her introduce herself. But I do want to talk about, you know, suicide a little bit. I'll bet you everybody here at some point has either has been exposed to or known somebody that committed suicide. And in my case, I had an aunt. She was she had many kids. She and her husband, with all the nieces and nephews, we were her kids, which made for some pretty cool Christmas presents, I'll have to tell you. But she was a real sweetheart. I mean, we all loved her dearly. And she, when she was probably about 75, husband came back from golf one day, and she was dead. She'd taken a gun and killed herself, and he was in her bed. And none of us saw that coming. I mean, we were just shocked. We were angry a little bit, and but at the same time, we didn't see it coming, and so we tried to figure it out, and we finally had to realize we can't figure this out. And so when I heard John speak, I thought, you know, it was funny, about all the memories back about my Aunt Carol, and, you know, maybe miss her even that much more. So I thought it was especially during the time of Christmas, this is the time to think about this kind of thing and talk about it. So with not further ado, I'd like to introduce you to John Lalonde.
I'm not used to using the lapel mic, so I feel very fancy this morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Jen Long, and I am on the board of directors for the Washington State chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I work with this organization because I am very passionate in fighting suicide, and I am really grateful for the opportunity to be here and speak with you. I think, as Kit mentioned, it is a time of the year where you know, the weather is darker. We have a lot going on. There's a lot of external pressures impacting us all. So my hope is by the end of this, you have a little bit more knowledge about suicide, the ways that we can prevent suicide, and, you know, just really some tools to go out there and combat it a little bit. Okay, so American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is a national organization with the primary goal of combating suicide. Their mission statement is to save lives and bring hope to those affected by suicide. So AFSP was created in 1987. It was founded by researchers and families who had lost people to suicide, and they wanted to take action and find a way to combat suicide. Today, we combine both science and grassroots efforts to both educate people on suicide prevention and fund research for suicide prevention. We now have organizations in all 50 states and continue to grow rapidly. There's over a million people in our chapters at this point. So suicide can be prevented despite its complexity. We found that as we continue to fund the research behind it, we're looking at the scope of the problem, the research and prevention, and what we can do. So the purpose of this conversation is to really touch on each of those points and educate us all a little bit more on what suicide is and what we can do to prevent it. So how we talk about suicide matters. So before we get started, I'm going to talk a little bit about the terminology. It's important to model appropriate language, and we do this because the idea is we want to get more comfortable talking about it. So we're just going to go into languages, do's and don'ts. So I will admit that I have and will say commit suicide throughout this presentation. This is a newer thing that's come out, but our goal is to avoid saying commit suicide anymore. Reason being is it encourages a negative connotation, right? Commit is something that we use to say, like, commit a crime. Commit always comes with, like, a negative type of connotation. So instead, we're saying died by suicide, ended their life. Failure or success also does negative connotation. That being said, it is a newer idea that's come out recently, so I would encourage us all to try to avoid those words, but that being said, I have and probably will say it again. So let's talk about the scope of the problem. Over 800,000 people die by suicide per year. These are the most up-to-date World Health Organization numbers. That being said, it is likely that this number is understated and a lot more people die every year by suicide. It's a global issue, and someone actually dies by suicide every 40 seconds. So what that means is while we're in this room for an hour, 90 people are going to die by suicide. It's the 12th leading cause of death right now. And for every suicide, 25 others attempt, meaning per year, there's 1 million people in the U.S. that attempt suicide every single year. So we have a big issue on our hands. Let's move on to research, though. We've only in the last couple decades really started looking into research for suicide prevention. AFSP right now is actually the biggest funder of research for suicide prevention. Well, let's go into a little bit about that. So biggest piece that we look into is why do people take their own lives? So there's no single cause, but there's a lot of factors involved. A lot of the factors involved are mental health issues. So 1 in 4 people will experience a mental health condition in the time of their lives. And most do not go on to die by suicide, which is a good thing. But that being said, research has made it clear that this is a leading cause of why suicide happens. We've also learned that most people who are suicidal are ambivalent about it, so they don't have a strong preference either way. And why this matters is our research is now informed that key strategies in suicide prevention involve engaging the part of the person who wants to live. So focusing on the positive sides, focusing on the helping the mental health and pushing it towards not attempting suicide. And part of the thing, one of the things that we can really do for people, if anyone's struggling, is to focus on the reasons why they should live, why they should not attempt suicide. So the perspective of a suicidal person is really 3 points. It's the crisis point has been reached, desperate to escape the pain, and thinking becomes limited. So the way that I try to describe this to people who have not gone through a mental health crisis before, think about a time in your life when you've experienced excruciating pain, like the most pain you've ever had. In that moment, if someone were to ask you to give directions to your house, would you be able to do so? Probably not likely. I bring that up because this is really where the crisis that a person is going through pushes them often to that point of attempting suicide. They're not in a position where they're thinking rationally or thinking through, you know, a logical solution. So let's talk about who's at risk. Our research has really helped us identify some key factors that identify anyone that is likely to be at risk of attempting suicide. So these risk factors are health, historical, environmental. They all represent characteristics or conditions that increase the likelihood of someone to being in a position where they may attempt suicide. These are really important to understand so we can do things to combat. So health factors. The first type of health factors I would consider one of the most important. Most people who die by suicide have an active mental health disorder at the time of their death. Some of the mental health conditions are up there, but the biggest one that we see as a contributing factor is depression, which I think, especially in this time of year, it can be really prevalent given the weather changes, the pressures of the holidays, those sorts of things. Historical facts as well. So some of these things are having family history of suicide, family history of mental health conditions, childhood abuse. While most people who attempt suicide do not go on to die by suicide, previous suicide attempts are also a factor that can increase the likelihood. And then environmental factors. So access to lethal means, meaning do they have the ability to die by suicide? You know, are there weapons in the household? Are there medications that this person has access to? Often there are aspects that will contribute to the ability and the means. So I think this is one of the more important pieces that I want to talk to you today about, and I was actually talking to my husband, Will, about this earlier this morning. So on the outside, we often see the pressure points of people that may have died by suicide, but we don't see all the other factors behind the scenes. I know that I recently saw an article about a man who had taken his own life, and the article immediately went into some litigation that was going on. He was having trouble with work. He was going through divorce. There was all these factors that they're focusing on about why he died by suicide. But the reality that they may not know, or we don't often focus it on, are the things that we can't see. The genetic risks, the depression that's going on, the actual mental health crisis that we're seeing. So I think it's important that we better understand the factors that are not in front of us, that so we can work on really combating suicide. So one of the things that we're really doing is looking at biomarkers. So our hope is through research that we continue to get closer to a place where we'll be able to like take a blood sample and see a biomarker of someone's depression or mental health issues and be able to identify and combat whatever that biomarker is and hopefully help people from that perspective. Research is also important because it gives us the opportunity to see those signs that maybe we can provide an intervention or do some type of medication or therapy. So we're constantly looking ways to understand suicide more, to have methods to prevent it. So prevention. So just like there are preventative ways that we can make ourselves healthy, like if we know that you have heart disease or you injure a bone or something like that, you know, there are ways to help protect yourself and make yourself stronger. That's the same way with mental health issues. So if you have any type of mental health issues or you're aware of someone who has any mental health issues, there are things that we can do to make it better. So mental health care, really encouraging problem-solving skills, family and community support, cultural and religious beliefs. If you're proactive about mental health and make an effort to get healthier, you're ultimately you're going to have a protective layer around yourself. Feeling connected to family and community support also can really help someone who is contemplating suicide. So groups like where you guys are today is a great place to bring someone if maybe they, you know, aren't feeling great mentally. So we're going to focus a little bit more on the mental health part. So one of the things we really do at AFSP is focusing on providing a culture where we're more educated about mental health. I think there's a lot of focus right now, and historically has been a lot more focus on physical health. But like I mentioned earlier, 1 in 4 people will have a mental health issue. That's a lot of people. So the likelihood of you knowing someone, whether it be yourself or related or friends or family, is very high that you're going to have a mental health disorder. So it's critical to suicide prevention. We should really be thinking about mental health the same way that we think about physical health. So, things that we can do to be proactive about mental health include seeing a doctor or mental health professional, get an evaluation, discuss treatment options, and find out what might work best for you. There are several different options for treatment too. It's not so much of a you have to be seeing a therapist every week. Even just going one time and getting evaluated can be really helpful for your mental health. The law now requires insurance plans to cover mental health services the same way as physical health. The best way you can do this is also call your health insurance and see what they do in terms of mental health services, but really it's been through our advocacy that we've gotten it to a point where health insurance companies are now required to do this. So definitely look into that for either yourself or others. And then self-care strengthens mental health. I think that these factors are underrated oftentimes, but are so crucial in our mental health wellness. So exercise, sleep, healthy diet, stress management, reducing drinks, all those types of things are great at keeping a healthy mindset. And then support for loss survivors and those who with lived experience. So on a slide, a few slides back, we talked about one of the factors that actually increase the likelihood of someone to attempt suicide. And it's one of the factors are if you've been exposed to it. So one of the things we do at AFSP, and I would encourage you to do if you are, if you have people in your lives that have been exposed to suicide, is to offer support. So we do a lot of things internally within AFSP, but I think it's really important that any of those with lived experience have additional support in this area. So we talked about it earlier too, a lot of people who attempt suicide are ambivalent about it, meaning they don't have a strong preference whether they live or die. So the biggest thing that we can do is put time between them and the attempt. Because if the more that we can convince a person or show them really the better sides of life, the more likelihood we have of preventing anything from happening. And then also limiting access to means. We also spoke again earlier about if people have any lethal means around them, meaning weapons, medicine, anything like that, if we remove that access from the person, the likelihood of their survival also increases. So I'm going to go into a little bit more about the specifics about what AFSP does. So research, prevention, education, advocacy, these are all things that we do on a regular basis. AFSP has various events that we have and local events that I'll go into a little bit more. But all these things are really to educate the public about suicide and to offer our services and resources to continue to prevent suicide. So prevention education, we have several different programs, and I always like to bring this up too because we have programs that are specifically tailored to various groups. So for instance, if we're going into a classroom, we tailor our education materials to be age appropriate. So if you know anyone or have any groups that you would like us to speak to, we're more than happy to do so and can tailor appropriately. Here's some of the examples of what we have. So LGBTQ+, we have for younger, we have military, families, all sorts of different specifics. Advocacy and public policy. This is something that I've actually been able to get involved in. Every year we have a day that's called the On the Hill Day, and we go to speak to our representatives in the U.S., and really push to for different bills to go out and for different legislation changes that are specifically related to suicide prevention. The most recent one we worked on was the 988 bill, which passed. If you're not familiar with it, the 988 bill is really a huge push forward in mental health. And what it is it's essentially a new lifeline. So before, if you had a mental health crisis, there was a long 1-800 number to call. I don't remember anyone in 800 numbers personally, and I certainly am not going to remember it from having a mental health crisis. So 988 is now the new 911 of mental health care. This was hugely beneficial for a couple reasons. One being 988 is easy to remember. If you're having a mental health crisis, it is going to be way easier to remember than the 1-800 number. And number two is it really alleviated some of the pressure that was being put on 911. So historically, if you were having a mental health crisis, you would call 911, and people that were not necessarily trained in the mental health area were the ones picking up. We didn't have the resources before to deal with mental health crises in that time, and now 988 provides that. So when you call 988, a mental health care professional who's trained to deal with this area answers the call and can either send someone out or can de-escalate the issue while they're on the phone. But nearly 98% of the calls that are taken by 988 are de-escalated over the phone. And if a person needs resources, we're actually able to send them resources, whether that be a mental health professional. And then we also follow up afterwards as well. So it's been a huge resource. And it's open 24/7. And then the biggest project that we have going on at AFSP right now, and admittedly this has been set back with COVID. So Project 2025 is our initiative to reduce the annual rate of suicide by 20% by 2025. So with the way that suicide rates have gone, unfortunately, they have been increasing since COVID has ended, which is the opposite of what we anticipated. It's too soon to know why. We're looking into that. So our goal may be shifted, but we're still pushing towards it. So what can you do? The most important thing that we can do together as a group and as a society is talk about suicide. It's proven that the more we talk about it, the less it happens. And not just talk about it, but provide a space, a safe space, where someone else can feel like they can talk about it. And then watch for the warning signs, reach out and seek help. We'll talk a little bit more about the warning signs on my next slide, but it's really about being aware of the people that are around you, whether it be coworkers, friends, family. Watch out for them. And then reach out to them if you do think that they need help. There's a saying in AFSP called seize the awkward. Suicide is not a comfortable conversation to have. It's not even a word that I was comfortable saying in my past life. But the more we talk about it, the more you open up a space for a friend or family member to talk about it, the more likely they are to open up to you about it. And then if you do see the warning signs, please seek help. So here are some of the warning signs. Talk behavior and mood. So talk. So if someone talks about ending their lives, whether you think it's a joke or if they say it in passing, it's really important that you take each statement with heaviness and with seriousness. Anytime someone says that they may not have any reason to live or if they feel trapped, anytime that they talk about being overwhelmed or any unbearable pain, anything that indicates any desire to potentially end their life. Behavior. So increased abuse of alcohol and drugs, isolation. I like to say that any behavior that is atypical for a person is a good behavior to be aware of. And anytime that they do anything maybe erratic, like if they're giving away their possessions, if they are acting maybe even a little bit manic, these are things to be aware of. They're all warning signs. And then mood. We all have ups and downs in our moods. It's totally normal to have good and bad days, but if something has shifted completely in a person where you know, they are suddenly have unexplained depression or unexplained happiness, and it's not just a normal up and down. If it's a complete shift in how they are as a person, that's a good factor to be aware of as well. Ultimately, trust your gut. It's good to assume that you're the only person that this person is coming to. It's a rule of thumb, if you're wondering if someone is depressed or overly anxious, it's a sign to reach out to them. Always trust your gut, reach out to a person, look for changes in their behavior, and trust that you are actually seeing what you're thinking. And then some options on how to reach out to them. You can reach out to them in private. You can express your concern about your caring. Don't be afraid to ask directly about any suicidal thoughts. The more we talk about it, the more we offer a space where you feel comfortable talking about it, the likelihood of us preventing any potential suicide attempts is a lot higher. Avoid minimizing feelings, avoid trying to convince them life is worth living, avoid advice to fix it. We say this because the best thing you can do is be a listening ear and then get them the support and buying that time of finding someone that can help them, a trained mental health professional. And then if you think that they may attempt soon, stay with them, help them, remove the lethal means, and escort them to mental health services. If the situation does put your safety at risk, though, leave and call 911. And then for emergencies, you can call 911. So we talked about 988 earlier. I want to be clear. 911 is when you're in like an emergency where you think an attempt might occur or attempt is in progress. 988 is if someone's having like a mental health crisis. So just want to be clear on the difference of which resources should be used when. So together we're going to create a culture that is where more aware of mental health crises and more aware of suicide prevention. So there's different ways that you can get involved aside from being a support system to your friends or family members, your colleagues, the people that are around you. You can actually get involved in our walks. You can sign up to be an advocate. You can sponsor events. You can actually get trained to teach programs like similar to either what I'm teaching today or to different groups. The Out of Darkness Walk is the biggest event we have every single year. It was in October this year, and they have them all over the place. They have an Everett Walk, they have one in Seattle's proper area. They have them all over the state and all over the country for that matter. But we come together and we walk to honor those who have attempted, who have died by suicide, and we walk to really advocate for suicide prevention. This year, we ended up having 1,500 people join us and raised over $150,000 in funds. So it's a very big event, and it's honestly very cathartic. The picture that I have behind me is our bead ceremony. The bead ceremony is an opportunity for us to take a set of colored beads. Each set of colored beads has a different meaning if you've lost a family member, if you've lost a spouse, we lost a parent, and we have a moment of silence for each category, and it's a really beautiful ceremony. So if you've been impacted by suicide or know someone has, I strongly encourage you to bring them to this event because it is really a healing process. And it's pretty powerful to see all of these people in one room knowing that they have had a similar experience to you and that you're not alone. So that really includes the more informative piece of what I've come here to say to you. What I haven't told you when I normally start this presentation with is why I'm passionate about suicide prevention. I lost my mom to suicide in 2013. I had just graduated grad school from University of Washington, and the next day I lost my mom. It was obviously unexpected, and it impacted me in ways that I can't even begin to express. But what I will tell you is that after I lost my mom, I was not able to even say the word suicide, let alone think about it. I told my friends, anyone who I met knew, that had known my backstory, that I lost my mom and I wouldn't talk anything more about it. That was until I met a friend who had lost an uncle to suicide, and she was so freely speaking about it and was just so comfortable talking about it. And I asked her, you know, I was like, how do you feel so comfortable talking about this topic? Like, I cannot even begin to tell anyone that I lost my mom to suicide, let alone talk about suicide in general. And she introduced me to American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And that fall, I went to my first Out of Darkness walk and fundraised to fight suicide. And since then, I've been really strongly involved in the organization, and it's why I am so passionate about the organization, is it's given me a platform to be comfortable while talking about suicide, to reach out to survivors, to reach out to people who have also lost someone to suicide. And our goal really is to stop this from happening, because at the end of the day, suicide is completely preventable. Like, we have this 12th leading cause of death that is completely preventable. We can actually realistically bring that number to zero. So I encourage all of you to talk about it, to reach out to those friends and family members that maybe need a little bit of help, especially over this time of year and the holidays. And remember that there are resources out there for you to use. Thank you guys for having me today. Does anyone have any questions or comments or anything like that? Yeah.
So I have teenagers, so suicide prevention at school is kind of a big topic. But, like, in terms of demographics, is it pretty much evenly split across, like, age groups as to where suicide happens? Or are there different age groups? Because I always, having teenagers, think about teenagers, but I feel like that's probably not the highest demographic.
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. It has changed over the years. I want to say, and I don't, I'll look into it and you get my information, because I do not want to misquote anything. I believe that it is younger demographic where it is higher, but there are certain groups where we typically see higher numbers, and that's why we have, so it is younger groups. It is veterans have a higher rate as well, and so does the LGBTQ+ community. So these are the communities that we've seen higher numbers in, and that's why we're so focused. But I don't know the exact spread. Yeah, but they do have, so the Seize the Awkward, the quote I said earlier, they actually have specific programs for that demographic, and a lot of it is because I know at least when I was growing up, suicide wasn't a conversation in schools at all. And it should be. It should be a conversation. And so CZ Awkward is a specific program for that. So I don't know what they're doing, but it's a good program to have. Yeah.
Did you say there's a higher rate among veterans?
I did, yeah. Yeah, so we have specific programs for the veteran community as well, because we have seen the higher rates there. And I don't know all the reasons, but a lot of it has to do with obviously the post-traumatic stress that is involved.
Surprises. Mm.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just taught, like, the more you talk about it, you're giving someone that idea. Is that just a myth then?
It is, yeah. So, and I think that's why it's been so hush-hush, is that we've been given this impression of, oh, the more we talk about it, you know, we're kind of like idealizing it. It's actually the opposite. The more we talk about it, it's been proven, the less it's happened. One of the things that we're actually working on too is getting funding for screening in emergency rooms. So we found that people are often, unless they are prompted to open up about either suicidal attempts or mental health issues, people don't often bring it up. And so, correlated with what you're saying, the more we talk about it, the more people are likely to open up about their idealization of suicide or their mental health crises. And then the minute someone opens up, the minute you're able to offer them that support system and offer them the lending ear to steer them away from that. So it's actually quite literally the opposite of it.
Do you find that is also true with media coverage? I used to be in the news business, and again, some decades ago, but you would cover maybe a homicide, but if it were a suicide, it was like, oh, no, it was a private thing, you wouldn't write about it unless it happened in a very public place. I wonder if that thinking has changed too.
I don't know what the media side of it is. I know I mentioned a little bit on the media earlier. I do think that obviously it's hard to cover what the media or control what the media says, right? I do think that the one thing that doesn't serve us well is that it's always focused on, what were the factors that you can see are, he was going through a divorce, or she was going through a job loss, those types of things. So I don't know what impact that has. But I'd be curious, and I'd be curious to know if we're looking into it. But yeah, I think if it's starting a conversation, I think it does more positive than it does harm. All right, well, if there's no more questions, I will wrap up. But I will, I believe Kay has all my information. I'll leave my information behind. So if you have any other questions or comments, or are interested in getting more materials, I'd be more than happy to provide them. But thanks for having me.